Radio.
Wonderful, and it is Siren Radio. And we've also got Fergus Jeffson in the studio as well. We weren't expecting you, Fergus, but it's always a joy to have a lad from Leicester who supports Leicester City Football Club in the studio. How are you?
I'm doing very well, yeah.
Very good, very good. Okay, Anna, who would you like to speak to? It's an all-male lineup, I know, unbelievable. You can speak to our sports commentator and general all-round author extraordinaire, of whom it has been said by no less personage than the Rye Arts Festival, like a dazzling over by Shane Warne in his pomp. It had it all. For his version of a leg break, googly top spinner, flipper, slider and zooter, Graham delivered facts, history, poetry, intrigue, jokes and even live music. The audience were left bowled over by a fabulous evening where ball tampering held centre stage in a tour de force of all-round entertainment. Thoroughly recommended. Or you can speak to Fergus. Who do you want to go to, Anna? I think that was that a cricketing Graham? We were just losing a little bit of you. Can you say that choice again, please?
Well, Leicester is something that came up on my radar last week as the place where the King's remains are buried in the car park. And I wondered if the people of Leicester have any views about the whole thing about the war connection and the body in the car park.
As ever, like a Brexit vote, Anna, you've just literally sort of just thrown a whole completely sort of span in the works there. So indeed, Fergus, what do you think about the body in the car park?
Well, it was such an amazing thing when it happened. So you're talking about Richard III, because we've all known about the Battle of Bosworth and you learn about it in school. Mm-hmm. So you go on trips to the battlefield. But it was just astonishing when it happened, and the fact that the whole world was suddenly focused on the city in regards to this king being buried in this car park and this fascinating investigation about that proved that he had scoliosis, which people thought was an urban myth. And they reburied him, and they had this huge like Channel 4 live burial. You had Benedict Cumberbatch reading some like famous poem.
And you know you're a very important historical person if Benedict Cumberbatch is doing the reading.
Exactly, because he was going to play him on television at the same time. So, but the world's media just suddenly took notice of this thing that someone just discovered because people thought that his body had been lost hundreds of years ago. It was fascinating.
I just found, I've been to Leicester once and that, it seemed a nice place. I only went to visit a friend who was studying up there, but it struck me as you can't develop it.
I don't know whether it's a case of you're back at home as opposed to various other things, but normally we get a better link when you're actually in the middle of the London Underground, Anna. But that's okay. We don't mind. Phone systems can actually work on that. We got the gist of it being that you had visited Leicester once to visit an old college friend, and it was quite a nice place.
Quite nice. But I think this, the car park is actually put on them. It's kind of made it.
Do you know, Anna, I mean, what can I say? I mean, Emma Street has just actually arrived because she cannot stand listening to this any longer. It's all right. She supports Tottenham Hotspurs. Life is like that. It happens in all sorts of wondrous ways. So I'm going to put Emma straight into the task of actually asking you those last two questions. Emma, please throw them at Anna Lewis, whichever way you wish.
Well, hello, first of all.
Hello.
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
I certainly have, thank you. Cheers.
And will you be joining us again soon?
I'd be delighted, thanks for asking. Cheers.
Splendid. I wonder if William Coles will ask about the cricketing book.
Thank you.
scary. Why would you want to look through somebody's window? Surely there's got to be a law against that.
William Coles, romantic novelist, political journalist, and regular midweek drive correspondent from the capital of Scotland, with or without his prehistoric shark's teeth.
Presumably, William, you'd only look through a person's window if it was for a good news story, basically, in the days of your News International career.
I used to do it a lot, but no, I'm a snooper. If there's a window going, I'm going to look through it. When I was in New York, I had a telescope as well.
Nice. You see, and that's led to us having Donald Trump in one part of the Atlantic and Boris Johnson conceivably in another part. I was actually looking at the lines that were being put forward by folk writing for The Observer, which you might say have got a bit of bias in terms of the whole thing. We actually have Max Hastings, probably one person not known for his left-wing leanings, former editor, of course, of the Daily Telegraph, and his line, "It is a mistake to suppose Johnson a nice man. He often behaves unpleasantly."
Yeah, he doesn't like Johnson. I think he's a bit gutted that he'd rather fancied the job as Prime Minister, and he can't believe that one of his minions is going to get the job.
Yeah. Guttuhari, Director of Communications for Johnson's mayoral administration, he is much diminished in terms of integrity, political courage, and in terms of credibility. I used to think he would be fantastic number 10, but those days look a long time ago. And yet, it's, I don't know, where do we start? Shall we go back to the Cricket World Cup and other such matters? Because we also have to give a little memorial mention to Kelly Duncan Joyner, who sadly passed away few days ago. One of our wonderful midweek drivettes based in California. And sadly, she's up in Heaven FM, so we've got a special tribute for her with a little musical number that you might sort of find quite extraordinary in all sorts of ways. It's Shirley Temple. That's all I shall say, Shirley Temple. Who do you wish to chat to, William? I'll give you the same lines that we put to Anna Lewis, and she basically threw a complete curve swing on the whole sort of, and took us down to a Leicester car park. Is it going to be Fergus Jeffs? We weren't even expecting him on the show, but he's here. That's good. That's fine. Emma Street, yay. Is it your first Midweek Drive evening show?
It is, yeah.
Wow.
My first time here.
Normally you're
Wednesday.
A Midweek Drive morning edition.
I am, yeah.
And now you've stepped into those shoes that have been left vacant by Ben Lewis.
I have, or trying to.
Exactly. And you're there. Marvellous. Going into your second year, of course, in the wonderful world of public relations and communications.
I am, yeah.
And next week, of course, you'll be working for a public relations company in Lincoln.
Yeah, shooting star PR.
Marvellous.
Yeah.
It's great stuff. And then back with us a week after and doing all sorts of things. Or will it be Graham Lloyd with an E, ace broadcaster, ace commentator, and crusading journalists to actually, as you may recall a year or so ago, take on the might of Sotheby's about the cricket ball that really is not the kind of cricket ball that's being sold as, ultimately.
Yes, I remember.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah. So it's over to you, William. You are the co-presenter. I shall go off and sort something else out in the betwixt times.
Excellent. I'd like a stab at Fergus, if I may.
Wow. Great, what
wow,
can I say? It's the public.
This.
I'll say like so,
Fergus, I've been doing a bit of work on luck and whether you can make your own luck, whether you can get luckier. And so what has been your luckiest break?
Oh, that's a tough question, really. I don't really know how to answer that because I you don't really remember kind of the moments like good luck or bad luck really. I guess a pretty
so it's
even
all just
luck,
down
really.
To crop.
No,
you
no,
can
I'm.
Make
I'm
lucky.
I think it's just I don't know how you do stuff to make yourself luckier. I think you just I don't know just try and not ruffle any feathers really. You know, try not to do anything that.
Not
cause you any misfortune.
Any
no, but like, I mean, not to do anything to cause you misfortune, because if you have misfortune, you're more likely to get bad luck than good luck.
So, are you superstitious?
Not really, no. I mean,
would you walk under a set of ladders just to actually say, what the hey?
I'm more just up to the side. Like, yeah. Only in the back of my mind. I'm not a superstitious person.
Cracks in the pavement?
I step on those all the time. to make it look you, I think you just. I don't know how to really.
You've stumped him, William.
Okay.
You've stumped him.
Yeah, I've been stumped.
Exactly. Yeah. He's lied his way through life. He's lied his way through politics. He's a huckster with a degree of charm to which I am immune. As well as being mendacious, he's incompetent. Chris Patton, Tory ex-minister, in an interview about Boris Johnson. Sorry, I mean, I'm not taking a political line here, obviously, but, you know, it's just, given that there's only a teeny, teeny, tiny proportion of the country that actually are electing our next prime minister, I think it's fair to say, you know, we can have fair comment, can we not, Greg?
Well, it's only 0.03%. Mm. It is, quite frankly, outrageous. Yeah. But there we are.
Yeah. Gordon Brown probably sitting back...
Is Sarah now a Corbynista station?
Whoa. Absolutely not. I've been 15 months out of the Labour Party, having joined the Labour Party to try and get rid of Corbyn. I failed. And then 15 months ago, I decided to leave because of his terrible performance on the Russian the ex-Russian spy, Brexit and anti-Semitism. And no, there is no Corbynista here.
I think Graham's sort of come out fighting with that one. I was going to say, Graham, did they actually do an Alistair Campbell with you?
No, they didn't, because I actually decided, having been in the party for a couple of years, I couldn't be a member of the Labour Party before because I was a news and current affairs journalist, and I always felt there was a potential conflict of interest. But I joined, and I helped get Lincoln... their Labour MP, Karen Lee. I did a little bit of media training with her. And then I went out canvassing, and the number of people who said to me on the doorstep, if it weren't for Jeremy, we'd vote Labour. And I went with it. And then in the end, I just had to say, that's enough. And my £2 a month went to Change UK. But then at the European elections, not too long ago, for the first time in my life, I didn't vote Labour and I voted for the Greens. So, no, William.
What's wrong with my friends in the Liberal Democrats?
Well, it was a toss-up. And I had a word with my local Green councillor, who actually lives opposite me, or rather she's a candidate for the Green Party. And then I went online, William, and had a look at this website that gave you advice on tactical voting. And they said that in the East Midlands, the Lib Dems were very, very sure of getting one seat. And if you wanted to vote for another Remain party, you should vote Green. So I voted Green. But she didn't get in. But the principle is that I am one of God knows how many thousands of people who have had enough of Labour. And unless Corbyn stops being ruled by his little cabal of lefties, then Labour is sunk, in my view.
The views of some of our Madrid Drive correspondents do not necessarily echo the views of the station. I want to make that quite clear. But I will actually cite Michael Heseltine, the last little quote here, a Good Morning Britain interview in 2018. Johnson is a man who waits to see the way the crowd is running and then dashes in front and says, follow me!
I have never in all my life seen so much vitriol directed at one particular person because he is a liar. End of story.
So does that help you in Scotland then, William, in terms of the perception that's actually there? I mean, I thought it was bad when Nigel Farage decided
that's
to go
good.
There.
But could I just throw one more spanner into your ointment, Alex? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I am possibly the only person up here who's rooting for Boris to get in. Shall I tell you why?
Yeah, I think I know why. Yeah, carry on, William.
Well, 10 years ago we had Dave Cameron school days. If Boris gets in, I can just bring it out again for a new title.
Okay.
Eton and other messes.
Yeah. Sometimes, William, I mean, I appreciate the awesome writing that you've actually done, the great novels which we're happy to produce, but honestly, where's your soul, man? Okay, step away from that. Who else do you wish to speak to, William? I mean, now we've actually sorted out Fergus's luck problem. It's like lucky day.
You're right, yes. Yeah. Emma, can I ask Emma the same question about luck? Can you make yourself lucky?
I mean, I suppose you can make yourself lucky if you, you know, apply for the lottery, like, a certain amount of times, you know, you're guaranteed to win it at least once, and I guess that's...
But you can win the lottery every week, just don't buy a ticket, you know.
I don't know what else. I mean, I used to be quite superstitious when I was younger. I have, like, a little lucky charm kind of thing, but I think that's kind of more... it's psychological, really, isn't it? I think if you have a lucky charm to bring you luck if you're about to, like, do some kind of performance or something like that. But I don't really think that's the same thing. But
And dare I say you're going to ask the same question to Graham as well, William?
Yeah, of course Graham believes in luck. I know it. And he knows that you can make yourself lucky.
You can make yourself lucky. I'll give you a very short story. When I was probably now about how old am I? When I was in my early 30s, I was doing some commentary, football commentary for BBC Wales. And what happened was I did a match at Swansea, and it was a very bad weekend, and all the main games featuring John Motson and Barry Davis and all those commentators were snowed off. And so the BBC in Cardiff sent the BBC in London some footage of my commentary on, I think the game was Swansea versus Peterborough. And the then editor of Match of the Day, he gave it to Barry Davis and said, would you have a look at this, Barry, and then voice it up? We're very short of pieces. It's not a bad game. And Barry Davis heard my commentary and said to the editor of Match of the Day, we don't have to voice this up. This guy's OK. And as a result of that, I had my sort of one cap wonder moment when I think it was in 1992, Barry Davis and Gerald Sinstad were away at the Winter Olympics in Albertville, and I had six games on Match of the Day, and that was just luck. And that's just because of the good old British weather. Mm. So, yes, I believe in luck. I think you can make your own luck. Being in the right place at the right time, William, is really what it's all about, isn't it?
And preparation. You were ready for it.
I was.
You got your chance, and a lot of people might not have been up to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Graham was always up for it. His middle name is I'm Ready. Let's move on to why you weren't on the programme last week, William, because you were on the red carpet once again for a premiere of the Edinburgh International Film Festival. What were you seeing? It wasn't Boys in the Hood, was it? It was something completely different.
It was Boys in the Wood.
Boys in the Woods, exactly. Not Boys in the Hood, Boys in the Woods. What was it all about? Did you enjoy it?
It was about four kids going on a four loutish kids going on a Duke of Edinburgh hike through the Scottish Highlands. There weren't many woods in it, actually. And these toffs, led by Eddie Izzard, are out to kill them. And so it was a horror comedy. It was quite fun, yeah. Mm. I think teenagers would like it, yeah.
Okay. We can go with that. That's pleasant from that point of view. Who would you like to ask you those last two questions? Let's resume to that little line, because I think it's quite interesting. I mean, Emma did a startlingly wonderful job when she literally just arrived and literally just threw her in that point of view, which for a Tottenham Hotspurs fan is pretty good indeed. By the way, Graham, you've already made your contempt for Manchester City sort of quite open in a sort of pre-show chat. Any thoughts about Spurs? I mean, you would say they're a very well-run club.
I think they are a very well-run club, and I think they were very unlucky not to win the Champions League. Mm.
Thank you. They
probably peaked when they beat Manchester City earlier in the competition. Mm. They were great against Ajax, mm, and it was fantastic. But in the end, I don't think he quite got his tactics right, Mr. Yeah. Pochettino. Yeah, okay. And
why play Harry Kane? Well, you're going to lose.
He clearly wasn't fit, and I'd have thought if you were going to use him, you should have used him from the bench. But what do I know? I mean, I'm only a commentator. He's a manager, and he's the man who is paid to make those decisions. But Spurs, I think they're a great team. I'm really pleased eventually that they've got into their new stadium. Mm-hmm. And if they can spend a little bit of money in the close season, I think they could be up there. I think they will. I think Pochettino's actually made it clear to Daniel Levy that, okay, we've done pretty well without spending any money. In the last couple of transfer windows, it's time now to splash the cash, and I think they will.
You don't think Maurizio Pochettino could conceivably actually be persuaded to take over from Rafa Benitez?
No.
I just raise it in preparation for Atletix tomorrow, sort of way through that.
You're sounding like Boris Johnson. You come out with the most outrageous statements.
Difference
one after the other.
I don't build buses, do you? I do not build buses. Small ones, and then I paint them afterwards. Who would you like to have you ask you the last two questions? I was just distracted momentarily by the weekly photograph from Robin Pierce, also from Wales, actually. So he was joining us and doing a routine, as you can see, pondering life, the universe, and tonight's midweek drive. He's in a very almost Dalai Lama-esque pose there, as you can see from the point of view of our lead Starburst writer. And indeed, one of the contributors on the show today might have been Anna Lewis, who knows? Could be William Coles, could be Annette Andre, could be Zoe Jameson, possibly Gwyneth Griffiths, Sarah Huntley, Robin Pierce, or Phil Dearness. Haxley has a connection between Somewhere in Time, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Empire Strikes Back, and The Last Starfighter. Is it you, William?
It's not, dear.
Mm, okay. So, once again, the question remains, who from the trio in the studio would you like to actually ask you the last two questions?
The lucky Mr. Fergie, please.
The lucky Mr. Fergie. Mr. Fergie. Fergie. Yeah. Go.
So, William, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Yes, it's been more than interesting. Thank you so much for asking.
And will you be joining us again?
Just as soon as the boss asks me. Thank you.
Like the legend of the Phoenix, all ends with beginnings. What keeps the planet spinning? The force from the beginning.
Take back control. Got our country back. Got our country back. I don't know. Some days I think, what's happened to the millennials with respect to their popular music cultures? We're up all night to get lucky. What the hey? At least we can look forward to at least 10 minutes of magical, informative and wondrous thoughts on the state of the world as we say another efficacious audio missive from our ace actress and indeed Australian, American, British, general, all-round wonderful person. Can't believe Annette. 50 years of Randlin Hopkirk deceased, which we'll be celebrating later on this year. Awesome. Will you be coming back over to Britain for that?
Yes, I am,
yeah. Marvellous. We're sort of connected on that basis. In the studio, we have three fabulous folk. We have Emma Street.
Hello.
We also have
Hello.
Ace journalist Graham Lloyd and broadcaster.
Hello.
And Fergus, Hello. Very lucky Jeffs. That's Fergus Jeffs.
Hello.
So where are you going to take us this week where, as I said, we've already sort of had some of the comments that have been made about the prospective next Prime Minister. I still think my favourite probably is Michael Heseltine's Johnson as a man who waits to see the way the crowd is running and then dashes in front and says, follow me. Where do you want to take us?
This one, I think you'll like. It says, if you stand on it, you can still catch the hanging. That bit of motoring advice was delivered by a thin cowhand as he checked his silver-plated pocket watch. The actress, Sue Lloyd, and I were at a dude ranch in the New Mexico desert, taking a break from the Birds of Britain U.S. tour, promoting the U.K.'s swinging 60s as the new leader in fashion and the arts. We were like babes in toyland, with each part of the U.S. we visited, from New York to Chicago and then on to the wild and woolly West, more fascinating and surreal than we ever imagined. Following the young cowpoke's directions, we soon found ourselves crossing the rapidly running River Avon and into the one street, improbably named town, of Shakespeare. Once home to a prosperous silver mining boom in the 1880s, by the 1920s, Shakespeare had become a ghost town, as forlorn and forgotten as was the origin of its name. Apparently, the town had seen its share of some pretty dangerous gunslingers, including Billy the Kid, who, after busting out of jail, had holstered his six-shooter for a while to wash dishes at the town's only hotel, named, of course, the Stratford. But by the 1960s, Shakespeare had joined the rush to cash in on the reenactment craze, and along with its more infamous Wild West neighbor, Tombstone, became a popular tourist destination for families hankering to partake in staged public hangings and bank holdups, complete with blazing shootouts. All these years later, a recent New Yorker magazine story pulled me back to that more innocent time when Sue and I bought tickets to watch grown men wearing 10-gallon hats pretend to live by the law of the six-gun. Times have changed, the article sadly told me. The law of the six-shooter is back in fashion again, and this time it's not make-believe. These days, the town of Shakespeare has become the ghost of a ghost town, now privately owned and closed to the public. But Tombstone is thriving, with more than 500,000 visitors a year jamming the recreated saloons and brothel-lined streets, all eager to become part of a mythic history of an untamed Wild West. But while the tourists thrill to the dozen or so daily shootouts at the OK Corral, featuring the outlaw Clanton brothers dying their last at the hands of the legendary lawmen Doc Holliday and Wyatt Earp, another real life and death drama is playing out nearby at the Arizona border with Mexico. Out of the box, Donald Trump has ranted and raved that illegal immigration from Mexico is threatening the very soul of America, amounting to nothing less than an all-out war. And that was music to the ears for many of Tombstone's dedicated, pistol-packing, flag-waving reenactors, reluctant to holster their Colt 45s after the last drawdown at the OK Corral. One of those 9-to-5 gunslingers, Chris Simcox, who alternated his acting talents between playing Doc Holliday and Wyatt Earp, formed a vigilante posse called the Minutemen Civil Defense Corps, dedicated to rounding up migrants slipping across the border and holding them at gunpoint until the Federal Border Patrol arrived. After being investigated for several deaths of migrants in his custody, Simcox was charged with child molestation and sentenced to 20 years. But not before he attempted to turn over the posse's leadership to his trusted right-hand man, who was forced to decline the honor, as he just signed a contract with Disneyland to portray Mickey Mouse. The reenactment scene isn't just a quirk dedicated to keeping the legends of the Old West alive. There are more than 50,000 Civil War reenactors in the U.S., some who devote their entire adult lives to wearing the uniforms and bearing the arms of the warring sides. Apparently, there's no shortage of people willing to suspend today to live a life in the past, where the strapping on of a gun can shapeshift prejudice and a fear of change into patriotism. Reading the article jogged my memory, and I unearthed a yellowing document from my Birds of Britain memorabilia. It was an elaborately printed certificate making me an honorary colonel in the Santa Fe, New Mexico Army. Sue and I had been inducted into this imaginary defense force in a colorful ceremony held at sunset at the Dude Ranch, complete with a reenactment of old West pioneers fending off an Indian attack. That night, I had a nightmare that the imbecile in the White House threatened to activate my commission in his border war. I woke in a panic, wondering if it was too late to take early retirement. What do you think?
Never in it. You never retire. Never surrender. That's the important thing. Keep going. We need
not even from the New Mexico Army.
Well, I don't. I mean, that's a string to your bow. I never necessarily thought you would be looking for, but I can see it. I can see it. Let's open it up to the team.
Me with my 45 Colts on my hip and charging through.
Yeah, well, it would work. You know, we just need to have a casting director with a little bit of imagination, and whoosh, it'll be there. It's great stuff. Get Arthur to work on the screenplay.
Casting director time.
Yeah, yes. Graham, any thoughts?
I have a question for Annette. How do you feel about the prospect of Donald Trump being re-elected?
Oh, no.
Let's not get into that. That is a big, big thing for me. I will blow the phone to pieces.
Exactly.
So, come on.
No, you don't want to go
Alex,
there.
Come on. No, I'd like to hear, please.
Deep breath, Annette. Control.
Do you think he will be re-elected, Annette?
I have no idea. All I'm doing is sitting on my fingers crossed. Mm. And I can't speak about it because it is unspeakable.
Exactly.
Okay.
I mean, I can't rationally speak about that man.
Who is likely to oppose him?
I have no idea. We've got 23 out there.
That's right. That's why I'm asking you.
23
possible candidates.
Strangely enough, the number of chromosome pairs that exist in the human body. There we are. just interesting sort of line. I don't know. As I say, we could have actually sort of had a mild smile, but I mean, with Johnson on one side, and no, please, it's just enough of such effort. Let's step away from the whole thing. Let's work on that basis. Emma, you've got Annette's autobiography right upon your person there, literally looking at the whole source. So any questions you'd like to put to Annette about the text and other exciting developments? Blown away with the introduction alone, Annette. That's the key
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, I've never never been on the Wednesday, never spoken to you before. So I'm quite flabbergasted, really. Yeah. What's the favourite thing? Your favourite thing that you've worked on?
If you can pick.
Let's face it, Annette, you've never been asked that question before, have you? You know, I mean, all of these routines, people turn and say, "Oh, what's the favourite thing you've worked on?" It's like choosing between children, for goodness sakes.
I usually say Randall and Hopkirk because that was a great thrill to work on. I loved the two boys, and we had a good time. But, you know, there were a lot of other things in my life that I enjoyed very much. Some of it being theatre, some, you know, radio, some, you know, I had all sorts of things. I can't really choose and say that was my very favourite.
It's all good, as people would actually say. As the Dalai Lama might well say, it's good and it's impressive and it's functional in all sorts of ways. Slightly different routine. I mean, let's keep the whole system going. Have you been following the Women's World Cup over in California? Is it a case of, no, it's soccer and it's the USA women's team, so we're not interested at all?
No, not at all.
No, we are. Exactly.
I don't... I don't watch that at all. No. I happen to see it occasionally and say, oh, yeah, okay. Mm. Now, if it were tennis, that'd be a different thing.
Mm.
And Wimbledon starts on Monday, so, you know, that's a time when I glue myself to whatever I can find on television, despite the hours that we have.
See, you wouldn't know, Graham, that one of the things Annette did back in the day was actually smuggle George Best out of her flat. You know?
Really? Ah. Well, that's a great claim to fame.
It's a wonderful story. You must listen back to the podcast. It's awesome. Or buy the book. Either of those two things. You can only tease ahead of that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Annette, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today? Choking with emotion. it's great. It's nice. It's sorting through. Has it been okay for you, Annette?
Yes, absolutely.
Good.
Did you like the talk? I thought it was very funny.
I like the Mickey Mouse thing in particular.
Changing into going into Disneyland to play Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, and of course the classic line, of course, that the gunfight at the OK Corral also served as a classic episode of the original series of Star Trek, Spectre of the Gun. You know, the Clantons versus the Earps versus the Clantons. It's just a whole range of things there. It's American mythology of the Wild West.
I didn't watch a lot of those because I was working.
Exactly.
So I didn't get to see too many. And I didn't know that. Yeah, that's a good one.
Well, it all slots into place. That's the important thing. So can we look forward to, as we head to the second half of the year, because we've passed midsummer now, in July, will you be back with us again in full force?
Absolutely.
Post-Wimbledon. Hurrah!
Ah, yes.
Had enough of heartbreaking pain. I had a little sweet spot for the rain. For the rain in skies of gray. Hello sunshine, won't you stay? No, I always liked my walking shoes, but you can get a little too fond of the blues. You walk too far, you walk away. Hello, sunshine, won't you stay? Loved a lonely time. Those empty streets, no one around. You fall in love with lonely, you end up that way. Hello, sunshine, won't you stay?
And yes, we will be having a full performance by Graham Lloyd of one of his wonderful ballad pieces of poetry sometime in the next 20 or 25 minutes. But now it's time for what we're referring to as our regular veterinary slot, in association conceivably with Hugh Barry. It, of course, is somebody who just basically emerged as a genuine megastar when it came to our location report up at the Bramham International Horse Trials. Since then, basically, we haven't looked back, even though she's been travelling up to Edinburgh with the Royal Highland Show and a whole heap of other scenarios. Of course, it's the Balmoral Show. I like to refer to it as the Royal Highland Show. It's Zoe Jameson. How are you, Zoe?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
Very good indeed. Now, last week, of course, we exited with Bruce Springsteen with There Goes My Miracle. We thought we'd come back in also from the same album with Hello Sunshine this week. Bruce Springsteen carrying through that. You can ease things away in all sorts of other bits and pieces. But what have you been getting up to in Edinburgh with Hugh Barry? Did you, clearly you've survived to tell the tale, but what were the highlights and high spots of Hugh Barry at Edinburgh?
So we had a lovely time at Edinburgh. It was really sunny and the weather was great for the weekend when I got up there, so that was nice. I think the team had had a thunderstorm before I arrived on Friday, so I was lucky to escape that.
Yeah, well, you know, it's at the end of the day, luck, no question about it. We've already identified that early in the production. You know, you could generate your own luck and the clouds would not dare to rain on Zoe Jameson. It's not going to happen. It's the way forward. We did actually tag you at the Lincolnshire show because we saw the Hugh Barry event. Did we not, Emma? I think you were with us at the Hugh Barry event. I don't know. Anyway,
I can't remember.
I'm fairly certain we tagged in Zoe. It's just last week, after all, short-term memory. It's the first thing to go. And, you know, it's, you know, there we are at Lincolnshire show. Thinking, oh, yeah, let's actually tag Zoe into this, Hugh Barry. It just passes its old system there. But we do have, as well as Emma Street, the wonderful Graham Lloyd. Zoe, I'll pass it to you. Would you like Graham to actually do his recitation for us now? I mean, he's a wonderful sports commentator and author. We haven't really explained, Graham, the whole backdrop of the Six Sixes and why, for instance, Cardiff Book Festival said of your performance, it's not just cricket. Whether you love the sound of leather on willow or just enjoy a ripping yarn, Graham's a true all-rounder whose Six Sixes talk tells a tale of mystery and intrigue, which had our audience laughing, singing, questioning and clapping from the first ball bowled to the last. It's like seeing England collapse in the World Cup series, really. But obviously only if you're into Schadenfreude.
It wasn't quite that bad.
Did it not?
No. Long story short, I've proved that the world's most famous cricket ball is a fake because it's the wrong make. Okay? It was a cricket ball hit for six sixes 51 years ago in Swansea by a man.
Before Zoe was born.
Yeah.
Just saying. And Emma and Fergus.
I realise that.
You.
But not before you and I were born.
Just don't go there.
In 1968, a man called Gary Sobers hit six sixes of some bowling by a man called Malcolm Nash. And in 2006, the ball was sold by Christie's, the world's leading auction house, for £26,400. And I have proved that it wasn't the right ball because it was the wrong make. And what I did last year, which was the 50th anniversary of the Six Sixes, I went round the country on a tour of literary festivals. And I write a few poems and I sing a few songs and I tell a few stories and I show a DVD of the Six Sixes. And
it's a multimedia experience.
It is. And the last time I was in here, I think, was about a year ago or maybe 10 months
just
ago.
Just before the Newark Book Festival.
That's right.
Which, curious enough, comes out in 2 weeks' time.
Yes. And that was one of about 14 literary festivals I did, from Swindon in May through to Taunton in November. And I had a great time just publicising the whole thing. And what I'm trying to do, Zoe, is actually persuade Christie's to admit that they sold the wrong ball. And it's proving incredibly difficult because all the evidence is in my favour, whether it's eyewitness accounts, video footage, documents that I've got from the time. But they refuse to accept it. They say a mistake wasn't made and basically we're not interested. So it's a long job.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. But I feel I'm making a little bit of progress. you do occasionally get a bit downhearted because they just don't seem to be willing to engage. They just seem to say, well, you might have all the evidence, you might have all the facts, but we're not interested.
That sounds like quite an undertaking.
It is. It's something I've been doing on and off for about 10 years, actually. I actually found out that the wrong ball had been sold in about 2007, and every now and then it sort of pops up. And it popped up last year, and Alex knows that about a month ago, at the start of the Cricket World Cup, the BBC in Cardiff did a little piece on one of their current affairs programmes.
Appearing on the BBC's Wales Live programme, broadcast in May, this is Alex Capon, about the controversy relating to the sale of the Six Sixers ball back in 2006, Lloyd is described as a man on a mission in trying to get Christie's to admit they sold the wrong ball. Yeah.
But it's hard work. Sorry, Zoe, yep.
It sounds like quite a mission indeed.
Yeah. What you've got to try and understand is that we're not talking about, you know, the local auction house down the road. We're talking about one of the big two, Alex, probably the big one. You've got Sotheby's, you've got Christie's.
It's not Floggate or Cash in the Attic, let's face
it. No, it's not. And it's only a cricket ball, but it's the principle.
Exactly.
And what upsets me is that we're living in a terrible age at the moment of fake news. You know, people are just saying things that are wrong. Like with the potential Prime Minister, Boris Johnson. He's just coming out with things that are not true. We've seen the doctored photo, all this sort of stuff. And
Zoe, do you think that the potential Prime Minister is saying things that aren't true?
No idea.
Exactly.
Oh, come on.
No idea.
He's been in the news. He's been in the news for refusing to do interviews for the past week. And he's a charlatan. I think that's a nice way of putting it, Alex, wouldn't you say?
At the end of the day, Zoe is in the business of helping animals, and Boris Johnson doesn't qualify as that because he's subhuman. Oh, sorry. No. Oh, sorry.
So what are you doing at the moment then, Zoe?
In London. So I'm in here today, so it's a nice little break from university. So yeah, just catching up after the Highland, which is good.
And in terms of when you actually get back to Central School, because we will come back and see you hopefully in London, in situ, so to speak. I mean, when you graduate and you get your full veterinary qualification, will you still be doing partly Dew Barry stuff, or in the case of no, I will then be working with animals full time?
Well, I'm not sure about that. We'll have to wait and see, I think.
And any ideas? Are you going back to Northern Ireland? Will you be staying here? Will it be hard backstop? Will it be? Who knows what's happening?
I don't think I'll be going back to Northern Ireland straight after I graduate. Hmm. So we'll see how long before I hang up my boots, so to speak.
Oh, yeah, and take on your broadcasting challenges, which is all great from that point of view. It's all good. Zoe, would you like to ask any of the team a question about anything, really? I mean, some of the sort of topics we actually had down, summer trends, the importance of cosplay, which is costume, fashion, play, and fandom and so on, coping with change. Lord knows we have to do that. Or the Toy Story legacy, which I don't know if you've seen any of the Toy Story movies, but I was in tears over the Toy Story one. It's very sad, Toy Story 4.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah, heartrending.
I think I'm going to see that tomorrow night, so I'll bring some tissues.
I would definitely, yes, yeah, because, you know...
Well, Alex, you're just a big softie, aren't you? I mean, it's sad to see a man of your age...
chronologically gifted. We just work our way through that, but it's just so significant in so many ways. I mean, you've got a friend in me. It's just awesome.
I've seen the first three, and I must admit, they're fantastic, and I'm hoping to go and see this, the latest one.
Mm. Yeah. Well worth accessing from that point of view in so many ways. But once again, who would you like to chat to, Zoe? I guess I'm wondering, for transatlantic routine, because technically it's ZJ, but ZJ. ZJ sounds quite good. It says it could have pace, really. Just, I mean, to our California sort of correspondent.
Yeah, like some kind of DJ or something.
DJ ZJ. That'll work. Production meeting live on air. Who would you like to speak to? Yeah, we're just changing the English language here,
Alex,
as we work.
Quit while you're ahead, mate. Unfortunately, you've got another hour and 6 minutes, but you can't quit yet.
You've got Emma, who you've never met. You've got Graham, who you never met. And you've got Fergus, also, who you've never encountered. So who do you wish to speak to for a few words? Three complete strangers. It's up to you, Zoe, to ask them anything about life, the universe, and so on.
Oh, that's a very broad range of...
Yeah, but you can cope.
You've left the floor wide open.
You can cope. I know you can cope.
Can I ask first, Fergus, has he enjoyed his time on the show today?
Nice.
I certainly have, yeah. Because, I mean, as far as I knew, I wasn't...
We're kicking off
to be honest,
in a few moments.
So. I'm still going to turn up. They're going to have to bar the doors. But, I have so far. Yeah, definitely. And over the past month, it's been about
I don't know.
Month.
I forget.
Yeah, it's been a bit about a month.
Just
but,
blur
yeah.
it out completely.
But, yeah, it's been very enjoyable so far, yeah.
Hmm. This is good. This is good. Well, I think that went very well, Zoe. I mean, thank you for that. That's,
you can come back.
I think it's fair to say that Emily Maitlis will be worried from that perspective in terms of the way forward. Well, she was a bit out of her depth, wasn't she? Let's face it, when she was doing the thing.
I thought the format was totally wrong.
Once Rory took his tie off, she was gone. She was a puddle of water.
Five guys sitting on stools.
Staring.
Like a boy band.
Yeah.
Oh, it was dreadful.
Waiting for the key change.
It was almost as...
She did her best, Emily, I thought. But
did her best, but it wasn't good enough. Anyway, that's by the by. Emma, would you like to ask Zoe those last two questions today, please?
Yes, I'd love to. So, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
I have indeed. always provide some entertainment.
And will you be joining us again soon?
If they'll have me back.
Yay! And that's just some of the background theme that occurs when Gentile goes into action, isn't it, Gwyneth Griffiths?
It is indeed.
Yay! It's just there, the devil's gallop, Charles Williams in his concert from the radio series Dick Barton, special agent with, of course, good friend Snowy. Yeah. And others, which has brought so much entertainment to the world. And just wonderment. Now, another fantastic day out and about, according to a gentleman called Ed Curran, with Gwyneth Griffiths, your good self, at Newcastle Comic Con, and the strapline, Be More Geek. That's what we need for our next Prime Minister. Be More Geek. Take back control. How's it been going, Gwyneth? Because it's been over a year, possibly longer.
I know, it's gone by so fast, I don't know where the time's gone.
Well, time is just an illusory concept, as we know, in so many ways that things have changed. And of course, you've opened up your Lara Croft routine. Do you know one of the co-hosts wasn't aware this evening what cosplay actually was? The line there, the importance of cosplay in fandom. And one of the souls who you're about to speak to actually said, I hadn't got a clue what cosplay was. What's this? I had to look it up. Was it you, Fergus?
Who are you talking about?
Yeah, who are you talking about?
I had to look it up. And
so what are your thoughts on cosplay then, Graham?
I'd really like to know why they do it.
Hang on a second, meaning those people.
Cosplayers, because that's what you call yourselves, isn't it?
Yes, it is, yes.
Yeah.
We all do it for different reasons. I mean, for me, it was... I didn't really do much with my spare time, so it was kind of a fun way to meet new people and get to see my favourite guest as their character.
Right.
It's really fun to make clothes as well from scratch, and it's just a new hobby that I've got a bit obsessed with.
So is it a hobby, or do you actually make money out of it? Because I went onto somebody's website, and there are people who do this for a living, aren't there?
Yes, I do in a way. I've just started my own business called Sea Villagers.
All right.
So now I make costumes and cosplays for people.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's hopefully now going to be eventually a full-time business for me.
And whether it's Ghostbusters, whether it's Lara Croft Tomb Raider, whether it's Black Widow or various other sort of factors there, there's a sort of quality. Have you done, I've got to ask this question given the sort of Toy Story background, have you done Bo Peepers yet?
Not yet, but it is on my list. Nice. I was wanting to do it for the release, but I'd missed out. So it's going to be my Halloween costume. Uh-huh. And I'm going to dress my husband up as Woody. Whether we like it or not.
There are so many things I could say, but I won't because of broadcasting decency and legality and so on. But when you dress your husband up, it's great stuff. With full cowboy hat, obviously. That's the important thing. So I think since we spoke, of course, we've had several Marvel movies that have been released, including Captain Marvel, including the delights of... Endgame, and I gather, in fact, I've just been received a notification that there's a new chance to actually see the director's cut of Endgame, so you can see an even longer version.
I know. Well, just to get some people in the cinema, I think. Trying to beat Avatar off the box.
Well, it's a thought. Now, I mean, are you looking forward? Are you prepped for Spider-Man Far From Home?
Yes.
What sort of things will you be doing in Newcastle, where the fog on the Tyne, of course, Gwyneth, is all thine, all thine? Will anybody be dressing up as Rafa Benitez, because there must be a market these days, I would have thought.
Sadly not. I know, it's still sore.
Sore. So you can tell the hate, the pain that's there.
Yeah, it wasn't a great, you know, kind of knew it was going to happen, but bad time, unfortunately.
Well, Sam Allardyce is available if you want to see him return. So. Mark Hughes.
But,
anyway.
For Spider-Man, we're going to be doing some local cinemas, so Metro Centre, Sunderland Empire, dressing up as Spider-Gwen for that one.
Because Spider-Gwen is the incarnation of Gwen Stacy, who in the original timeline was actually tragically killed by the Green Goblin. Actually, you say that technically, and Robin Pierce can pick us up on this, technically it was Spider-Man himself who actually broke his girlfriend's neck because the spider thing was actually...
Yeah.
It snapped her back too quickly, you see.
Really?
He was trying to save her, rescue her. No! I know it. Very, very. Emma's looking very.
I didn't know that. That's very upsetting.
You're a mine of useless and not so useless information.
It's important that we work through that. And Gwyneth, I have to ask you the question: are you the soul who connects somewhere in time with the last Starfighter, with Raiders of the Lost Ark, and Nightmare on Elm Street?
What was that? Sorry.
Do you connect Nightmare on Elm Street, Last Starfighter, Somewhere in Time, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and Empire Strikes Back?
Oh, no.
No, you see, that's another one. Ticking them off. Don't think it was Zoe, but we didn't ask her, so you might as well say could have been.
May I ask a question?
I think that's what you're here for.
Right.
Go.
When you do your cosplay, who are the people you're doing it for? Do they pay for it? And are you able to cover all your costs?
Most times, no. some of the events now, I do get to go as a guest, so I will get like free entry. Sometimes travel expenses, sometimes hotel, but I do it for fun. So, you know, if I do get paid for it, it's better. But, you know, I do spend a lot of money on actually going to the events myself.
I'm going to like your piece as Spider-Gwen with Spider-Man. I've just actually done that. Yeah, so, as we're working through that. Emma, have you any... I mean, I know occasionally you get dressed up, I believe, as a Tottenham Hotspur supporter, but...
I do.
Do you?
Yes, I do that.
So with respect to this... Yeah, I mean, any thoughts about...
I've actually always kind of looked at it and wanted to do it myself, but it's... It's one of those things that you don't really know where to start, I think. And the money aspect kind of puts me off.
Gwyneth,
as well.
Gwyneth, there's a potential customer here with a whole range of other sort of things. So it's over to you, Gwyneth, to actually take Emma on this little journey through her cosplays, her cosplay career.
So what's your day job?
I work for a place called BMO Geek.
That's the word. BMG.
I'm a bit of a geek at the moment, you might have noticed. Cosplay wise, it is expensive, I'm not going to lie. You can get cheaper alternatives online. So there was a lot of AliExpress is quite good for costumes now, and you can get quite cheap ones. The quality's not too bad if you want to get started.
Yeah.
I'd look down that line. Like, it is from China, but it's completely. It's all. People worry about that, but it's absolutely fine. I've ordered loads from there. It's kind of like eBay, but for China.
It must be like a really nice community there, I can imagine, because you all kind of come together with like, not like one purpose, but you're not really your role. It's, I don't know, it's just...
That's saving the world.
People with the same interests.
Still trying to get my head around the notion that you've got Lara Croft with Wonder Woman, Iron Man, Spider-Man, Poison Ivy. I mean, you're mixing your franchises
up
there.
That's the magic
of
it. That's the magic.
A bit of a mixed bunch, yeah. But no, it is great because I didn't really have, after college and that, I kind of lost touch with a lot of my friends, and then getting into conventions, I've made this whole new group of friends, which is amazing through cosplay.
In fact, we actually met in Doncaster, I believe. Look, there's Gwyneth.
Yes.
Herself.
Oh, there she is. As herself.
Many, many years ago.
Yeah, I know. It's a strange world, but it's been a delight to have you back on board. Fergus, have you ever done any cosplay?
No, not myself. I've always considered, like, you know, when it comes to Halloween, like, doing it, but I've always
cosplays
thought...
for life, not just for Halloween.
I don't know, but that's kind of the time when most people do it. You know, unless they go to these, because I've always thought about going to one of these Comic-Con conventions, but I don't know if I just go up in like a T-shirt or something, or I just
you
like,
can do if you wish.
I mean, that's probably one of mine to do, but it's just like when you see like, I know it sometimes is just like, we're at like, what, how much would it cost to just do all this really if you're doing it for, you know, potentially a short period of time, because it's got to be something you want to commit to for a number of a period of time potentially.
Have you ever actually, Gwyneth, wanted to do a full mashup between Newcastle United and, let's say, I don't know, Lara Croft Tomb Raider? Because that would impress Mike Ashley. He might shell out a bit of money for you.
Well, I doubt it, let's be honest. But no, not say anything, but yeah, I've never thought about that. That's quite a cool idea. I don't think I've ever seen it. Football cosplay crossover.
Yeah, well, remember where you heard that little thing coming through.
No.
I think it's going to happen.
Full credit. Yeah.
Personally, as you know, clearly, Zoe, Gwyneth, it's a case of if you get the Manchester City outfit there, you can do it with anything. It'll fit with anything, really.
We need to ask Gwyneth, who is going to be the new Newcastle United manager in your view?
Honestly, I've got no idea. I don't know.
Well, who would you like?
I don't even know. I've heard some rumours, like, a lot of that never happened. Like,
Kevin Keegan returns.
No, I heard Jose Mourinho.
Yes,
that was the one. And that would be, like, obviously, I love him. I mean, he's
really
gorgeous as well. Yeah.
I don't think many Manchester United people do, but never mind. That's
by the by. Yeah. I mean, if we could get someone... You know,
and of course, the thing is, actually, with Mourinho, you would, after 50 odd years, actually have won something. So, I mean, there's a guarantee that it's that's not. Well, Fairs Cup, you know, before you were born, admittedly, but Bobby Moncur was there. Wee Bobby.
Yeah.
Followed by the other Bobby for Sunderland, Bobby Kerr. And again, look, console yourself, Gwyneth, with the fact that Sunderland are still two divisions below.
Oh, that is still beautiful.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's always that.
All else has failed. You know, Middlesbrough might just swap over with you next year, but it depends on Jonathan Woodgate.
We just want the takeover to happen. I think that's what we'll want.
Yeah, exactly. Because what fan really, I mean, Lincoln City, what fan doesn't secretly want to have their club taken over by a country that produces oil in the Middle East? I mean, it's there. Exactly. It's a much beloved thing. It's the way we go. That's the important thing. Do you know, I think I'm channeling the spirit of Boris Johnson. Anyway, not that he's dead. At least I don't think so now. Let's move on. Although,
Alex,
a zombie.
All I can say to you is
white hair.
No, keep taking the tablets.
White hair, Prime Minister. I think we've struck on something here. I think Boris might well be one of the undead.
Make a lot of sense.
Find out. I'll put you on the case because obviously he's got a partner who's in public relations, Emma. So find out from through the public relations network whether Boris has a penchant when he's painting his buses for eating human brains.
I'll find that out.
Last two questions for Gwyneth, please, Emma.
Yes. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
As always, yes.
And will you be joining us again soon?
Hopefully not in
a year.
Like, maybe, you know.
It won't be that long, Gwyneth. Honestly, you'll be back soon.
Awesome.
You've got a friend in me. You've got a friend in me. When the road looks rough ahead and you're miles and miles from your nice warm bed, you just remember what your old past said. Boy, you got a friend in me. Yeah, you got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got trouble, and I got them too. There isn't anything I wouldn't do for you. We stick together, see it through, 'cause you've got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. Now some other folks might be a little bit smarter than I am, big and stronger too, maybe, but none of them will ever love you the way I do. It's me and you, boy, and as the years go by, our friendship will never die. You're gonna see it's our destiny. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me.
Splendid. And you have got a friend in me, Sarah Huntley. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
And where are you?
I'm sitting in my garden at the moment on a hot summer's day.
Well, as we heard from Anna earlier in the programme, well, partially heard from Anna because her phone link was dreadful. You know, it was one of the weakest phone link systems we've ever had. I could have called her back, but I thought, no, we had to move on up to Edinburgh and then over to California and then back to
Wimbledon.
London with Zoe James and then up to Newcastle and then out to Wimbledon, exactly, where the Wombles are in full force and celebrating magical things because Sarah Huntley's back on the midweek drive.
Aha! Lovely.
Exactly. Now, Sarah, you are a Lambda tutor, ace actress and general all-round wonderful person, and we have a broadcaster who Barry Davis once said, he's good enough, give him the job. Match of the day, why not? I'm sure he's exactly what he said. Paraphrasing you, obviously.
That's fair comment, yes.
Yeah. So would you like to perform for the benefit of our listener? That means you. And Sarah Huntley, and a whole heap of us, and of course Emma, and Fergus, your awesome little text here. And Sarah will be taking notes because she's quite ferocious. I mean, she's not for nothing is she known as the Simon Cowell of drama. She
used to do. Goodness me.
Dulwich College, she's going to be all sorts of things here. And, I know Sarah might say, well, it is the Graham Lloyd, yes, with an E. G-R-A-H-A-M-E.
I think we need to have a little bit of context. I do a one-man show. And it's all about a person show.
Technically, we want to be politically incorrect.
Absolutely, it's all about the world's most famous cricket ball, which is a fake because it's the wrong make, and it was sold by Christie's.
Oh right.
Back in 2006, a man in India paid £26,400 for it. The trouble was, it was the wrong make, And I'm trying to get Christie's to admit that they sold the wrong ball. And as part of my one-man show, I read poems and I sing songs. And I'm just working on a poem at the moment based on the brochure. I'm just going to show this to everybody. This is the Christie's brochure, which at which the ball was sold in 2006. And the other day, I just started looking through it. And there are so many lots in there that are... The phrases are things like thought to have been used or it was said to have been used. In other words, sporting memorabilia just seems to be one of those things that...
Possibly, maybe,
absolutely.
Could be, now, whatever.
And that's it. So I
what
actually
about the facts? What about the facts?
Well, you know, Alex, I'm a journalist. I'm interested in the facts. My whole career has been based on the facts. I understand journalism is about opinions as well. Mm. But when you're selling stuff, I think... You ought to be pretty sure. Now, so what I did was I read through the notes in the brochure, all the things they say about the you know, the lots that are coming up. And I've come up with this little song. I'm not going to sing it to you because I've got a bit of a bad voice, but I'll read you the lyrics and you can let me know what you think. It's called Caveat Emptor, which means let the buyer beware. Yeah. So here we go. One glossy brochure, so detailed and slick, packed full of notes and with plenty of picks. From golf to real tennis, there were all sorts of sports, but how real were the items? Were buyers sold short? And the next verse is, the terms were set out in conditions of sale. Some lots weren't perfect, some worn, others frail. Staff views were honest, that was the norm, but historians and scholars were better informed. And then the chorus is, it goes, caveat emptor, let the buyer beware. Without due diligence, there's no duty of care. And then I go through various items. A Fred Perry racket from one of his clan, thought to have been used by that tennis talisman to seal his 3 Wimbledon wins in a row. But was it the right one? Shouldn't somebody know? A shirt signed by Pelé, still Brazil's biggest name. He was said to have worn it, but in which football game? Christie's can't do the exhaustive research that might stop collectors being left in the lurch. But a shirt from Brazil's 1970 top team ticked every box. It was what it seemed. Owned by Rivelino. You remember him, Alex? Rivelino?
I'm just pausing there momentarily.
I'm going to ramp this up a little bit
because we're going to actually do it. We'll take the last set of things without the commentary of sort of bits and pieces. We'll just read them. So I'll take But a Shirt, and then you take the next verse, and we'll go from there. Is that okay?
Okay. But a shirt from Brazil's 1970 top team ticked every box. It was what it seemed. Owned by Rivelino, it sure looked the biz. A signed letter of provenance confirmed it was his.
Scorecards and photos from cricket sold well. They were authentic, no doubt, you could tell. And volumes of wisdom were for sure the real deal. But they didn't come cheap and were rarely a steal. Caveat emptor, let the buyer beware. Without due diligence, there's no duty of care.
And that brings me on to lot 173, and this was the ball. Its troubled past has been troubling me. An old ball dispatched for 36... That's runs in 1968. The Sobers 6-6s by the game's greatest great.
The Duke was allegedly the 3rd of 3 balls, but the footage proves that was a tale way too tall. Nash bowled one surge as he looked for 5 wickets, so the Duke was a wrong one. And its sale, just not cricket. Caveat emptor, let the buyer beware. Without due diligence, there's no duty of care. I think a bit like sort of one of those Owen Morgan sort of numbers. Started off middling, sort of worked through, but Sarah Huntley, did we get through it okay? Or would you say that's rubbish? Start off from the top all over again.
I think the variation in pace with it worked very well with you sharing the stanzas.
Yes, I do wish he'd actually told me he wanted to share it.
No, I just gave up halfway through. No, I thought I had to substitute.
No, you should have said, because it would have sounded much better from the start. But.
We might do a reprise. I mean, at least this is a wonderful sort of line. I mean, it's great to have a rehearsal on air, I feel. It sort of gives a behind the scenes.
I really appreciate it. That's the first public airing of it. It will be part of my one-man show once I've sorted things out.
With the guitar.
With my guitar, yeah.
One person share, Graham. Let's be, you know, we don't want to sort of offend anybody at this point of routine.
Yeah, okay, Alex. Yeah. You're sounding very much like Boris Johnson there.
Please. Yeah. Just don't start. I mean, Annette almost went incandescent in California when we started talking about and I can sense, Sarah, from your own point of view.
I was going to say, Sarah, where are you on Boris Johnson?
Please. She stays well away from her, hopefully.
I cannot stand the man.
Really? Why is that?
Well, he's a buffoon.
Yes.
We all agree on that.
In the words of Michael Gove, I wanted to help build a team behind Boris Johnson so that a politician who argued for leaving the European Union could lead us to a better future, but I've come reluctantly to the conclusion that Boris cannot provide the leadership or build the team for the task ahead.
Sarah, can I just ask you a question? Your name is down on this running order here. Sarah Huntley, making a welcome return to TMD. Mm. What do you do? I didn't quite catch it in your...
What do I do?
Yeah.
Well, I'm an actress, and I'm a voice coach, and I'm a Lambda coach. Along with the Academy of Music and Dramatic Art, I teach Lambda.
Oh, right.
So I'm head of Lambda at Dulwich College in Alling in London, which you probably haven't heard of, but there's schools in Dulwich. And I also am I'm a voice coach in the city. And sometimes I do some acting. Actually, I tell you what my Midsummer Murders was on last week, Alex.
Wow.
Yeah, well, a repeat.
Yes. You should have let me know. We could have actually done the whole sort of package. I going to say we can't talk about the people she trains, Michael Owen. But, you know, other sort of folk are
actually... Michael Owen, you have trained Michael Owen, have you?
I know, I can tell you, re-Brexit, with Question Time, my latest person was Rocco Forte.
Oh, right.
Yes. Yeah.
But Michael Owen's an interesting one because I'm a football commentator as well, and I have a real interest in the pundits they use. And I'm going to say, can I speak honestly? Okay. You've done a very good job on him.
Yeah.
Because when he started,
hopeless. I first heard, I thought, Sarah, this is the mountain of stars. This is like Graham trying to actually get Sotheby's to admit they're in error over that cricket ball.
Yeah,
this is big.
What people don't realise is very difficult with sports commentating in football is that, because what you're looking for in the voice is a mixture of pitch, pace and tone.
Yep.
Variation. But it's actually quite difficult to be mellifluous with your voice when you're actually underscoring the whole time under crowd noise and stadium noise.
Yep.
So that you have sometimes a sort of permutating tone which can become monotonous and difficult.
Yeah.
Because the voice is being focused on trying to be heard over and above, even though when you're commentating. So obviously that in itself is quite a tricky one. And then if you've got someone who doesn't have, I think it's making people aware of varying the pitch, pace and tone that you're talking at as well. Mm. And that everybody has, all of us have a voice pattern.
We do, Sarah, we do.
Alexis has a very distinct voice pattern, as I do, as you do. And that's what makes us. But what you must do is never let the voice pattern become what the person is listening to. It's the information.
Yeah.
So you can't let the voice become a servant to the voice pattern. And people use voice patterns when they become nervous or stressed because they're working out what to say and how to say it. So all of those things put together, even commentating for a football match, over noise, you're not a trained speaker, but you know your subject very well, doesn't always translate into the best commentator because obviously you've got to learn to explore the possibilities within your voice, which hopefully, as somebody like myself, allows people to do, because that's all I'm doing. I'm not an expert. I'm focusing on the voice and making yourself sound interesting. But I'm very aware of, when I listen to voices, how monotonous and incredibly boring day-to-day some of the people that you work with can be, and how draining people's voices can be when they don't speak with energy and you go, that sort of suction of energy. So Alexis, you see, has, if you notice, mm-hmm. as we all love him for it, an incredible surge of energy that he always speaks with. You would never have Alexis unless he was being Ryan Cynical.
So
Ryan Cynical, of being sort of
jokey, being like, oh, like that.
You really should ask our customers. I mean, Emma, you've had me for a series of lectures, etc. I mean, how did you find the delivery? I was just a case of I was asleep for most of them.
I'm quite scared to talk now because I feel like my speech pattern's going to... I'm not quite worried that...
You can analyse every step.
We're all listening now. We're all listening.
It's quite intimidating, that. But no, I agree.
No,
you do have quite...
No, you've got a lovely voice.
Oh, thank you.
I think the thing is also that people that's also another thing that is incredibly irritating, when people are over-analysing and listening to themselves as they're talking.
Yeah.
Because that becomes very, very irritating, doesn't it?
One of the other things I do is that... Sorry, Alex, I thought you were going to say something.
No, I thought you have a... One of the other things you do is have a pause.
No. One of the other things I do is some media training. And one of the things we concentrate on is the voice. And I use the phrase... Get some variety into your voice. Would you agree with that, Sarah? You know, just highs
kind of
and lows.
And yeah, a bit more
pitch, pace and power.
Pitch, pace and tone. But if you think about it, if we go to our dear friend Boris.
Oh, please. We'd rather endure him as our neighbour.
You can't, Boris, I mean, I think they've all got awful voices. Like Jeremy Hunt's voice is petulant.
Yeah.
I think that Boris Johnson is a little... And I think that, well, I don't know about, well, he's out the running now, isn't he? But he's got a sort of, I don't know, his voice is kind of a spoilt little brat, actually.
Mr. Gove, I'm suspecting.
Mr. Gove is like, is a bit spoilt.
Anybody who actually is photographed by the press and actually has a video of him doing jogging at his age, it's not good. It's just a bad look entirely.
No, it's not with those knees. And then, actually, I was at St. Paul's for a service of remembrance for one of the schools I teach at, and old Farage was there.
Oh, no.
He looks like with his face? He's got that silly smile. It's like he's sucking a sweet.
A man frog.
A man frog.
He looks like Toad of Toad Hall, doesn't he?
He does. He's got a constant horrible a septic smile, I'd call it. Yeah. Oh, I don't really like anybody, as you can see.
No. Can I just ask you how much work you had to put in on Michael Owen? Because he has improved beyond
belief.
Recognition.
Beyond belief, let's face it.
I can't...
No,
I
you can't comment. Sorry,
it's okay. But it was considerable. She did very well. Yeah. Just say no more. For obvious reasons.
The girl done great.
Shh. Exactly.
The girl done great.
Hopefully you appreciate that, Michael. Anyway, moving on. You did once play for Newcastle United.
And he's a very nice man.
Yes.
Exactly. Very, very good. Sarah, would you like Fergus to ask you those last two questions?
I would indeed, yeah.
Off you go then, Sarah. Fergus.
Okay. So, Sarah, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic...
A reasonably interesting
telephonic link with us today.
Fergus has got a rather sexy voice.
Thank you very much.
Fergus, I've had a lovely time. Thank you very much, Fergus.
And will you be joining us again in the future?
Well, I do hope so. I tell you who I think we should have as Prime Minister with the voice. Bill Nye.
Nice.
Yeah, good shout.
Oh,
Rachmaninoff's Rhapsody on a Theme by Paganini, which leads us around to that the darkest hour in the original Star Wars trilogy has been voted as the biggest and best of the 80s, should come as no surprise. Not my words, but yes, it can be revealed. Those of our Welsh correspondent, Robin Pierce. How are you, Robin?
Hello there. I was digging the Paganini and the adaptation by John Barry. What a superb soundtrack.
Come back to me. Jane Seymour and Christopher
Reeve. I never left you, Alex.
There we are. That's just part of the whole rich tapestry. And it falls to your good self before, of course, we have a little tribute to Kelly Duncan Joyner, who, as I say, sadly passed away. And we go over to Phil Leonis in Los Angeles. What would you like to share with us about the... Oh, let's see. 87 and a half minutes of the programme, hopefully you've been accessing in ponderous mode, in contemplative mode, in kind of, you know, considered mode.
Yes, indeed. I was pondering life's vicissitudes.
Hmm. As you do. Vicissitudes, Emma. I'd like to see that in your next essay. Vicissitudes.
Yes, I will try and get that in there. Yeah, I will do.
In listening to your last, 91 minutes or so... I have observations and I have some questions.
Well, the team
the first
are
thing
there.
That really grabbed me was, can you make yourself lucky? In my case, not by any superstitious means. I don't go for, you know, talismans like a rabbit's foot. I mean, that wasn't lucky for the rabbit anyway, was it? Or rituals like, you know, chucking salt over your shoulder or whatever you do. But I do believe in a positive mental outlook and attitude. It helps, as well as the ability to, you know, spot an opportunity when they arise.
This is the gentleman who's basically battled and won against diabetes and a whole stack of other things over the last year when he was having all sorts of things. So let's face it, you worked through that one, my boy. Off you went and did
Thank
it.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Yeah. You know, being positive, you know, allows you to the confidence to walk in through the door of opportunity, even if it seems locked. You know, you just go in and introduce yourself. That's actually how I ended up introducing myself to David Howe at a sci-fi convention, which led to the Stone Tapes, which led to the Midweek Drive.
And your very own podcast, Piercing the Veil, let's face it.
Ah, absolutely, that one, yes.
And the additional things in the world's longest-running magazine of sci-fi and horror, writing about Kiss, no less. That's the band, as opposed to anything.
One of my favourite bands,
So there we are. But we mustn't tarry on such awesome things, such as the world's longest-running magazine of sci-fi, horror and fantasy, because people say, what's it all about? Where do you want to take us as far as the programme is concerned? Do you think we've coped with Ben Lewis's departure?
I think you have, admirably. I did like the poem about the overpriced fake cricket ball. Even if I'm not into sports, and I do apologise for that, Graham, but pretty much the same thing applies to, you know, geek collecting,
absolutely,
memorabilia. It's all the same thing.
Yeah, it's very worrying.
It is.
That, you know, people are prepared to spend thousands of pounds on things that might be what they're claiming to be.
Unfortunately, people are willing to take their money and give them a fake. My son actually went on one of these ads that pop up on Facebook from time to time, hoping to buy a replica of the Infinity Glove from the Marvel films.
Right, no.
And he was expecting the, you know, the real
full
deal.
Full Thanos gauntlet.
Yeah.
Lights and everything, control everything, instantly reset reality. How do you know he hasn't?
He was hoping for the prop replica, but what he got was actually a gold-sprayed marigold with these little gemstones.
Oh. Goodness me.
Oh, no.
And that must be the world's most expensive and disappointing marigold.
Stephen Pierce, you should have spent the family inheritance on something better. All I will say.
It's like a marigold glove that Elton John would use, but hey. Right. I'm going to see Spider-Man on Tuesday, and I was interested in what Gwyneth Griffiths had to say with all the cosplay, and I was wondering, now then, question to you, Alex. Mm-hmm. If I were ever to do cosplay, and I haven't, mm-hmm. I mean, my number one supervillain that I would like to go as is Mysterio, who we will see in Spider-Man Far From Home, because I've always liked that costume. Yeah. I was about 6 years old when I first saw that comic strip where Mysterio appears, and I always thought
he was just a failed Hollywood stunt person.
Yes, he was.
Now he's an alien.
Special effects. And I loved the dome, the big cape, the bodysuit, and the fact that he was standing in perpetual mist. Mm. As drawn by the great Steve Ditko. Yeah. So I'd go for that as a cosplay costume. Mm. If I couldn't go as that, I would go as Doctor Doom. Now then, cosplay, Alex, who would you go as?
Well, in my dreams.
A Marvel supervillain.
Oh, you see, I was going to go straight Green Lantern, straight down the line, you know, from that.
Yeah, that's why I'm not making it easy for you.
No. See, and you want Marvel, and to be precise, genre supervillains.
Yeah, Marvel supervillains.
Oh, probably Kingpin.
Yeah. Oh, I was hoping you'd dress up in the little leotard and the onesie. And the
in your fantasy, perhaps, but no, no. Got to keep it real. Yeah. Exactly. You step away from that.
I like the phrase, be more geek. I really want that on a T-shirt.
Let's see what we can work out. In 2 weeks' time, Robin Pearce might be in this very studio, coming over from Wales to celebrate 50 episodes of the Stone Tapes.
And is it two or is it 3 weeks?
Three weeks.
You need to fill us in.
You'll be there on the wrong week and you're not expecting.
What are the Stone Tapes?
What are the Stone Tapes?
Well, series, an episode done by Nigel Neal, who actually created Quatermass, and we actually use that as the line, the hook in many ways, for author Sam Stone to actually have a very own podcast called The Stone Tapes, which we produce in these very studios.
Right.
Which has now reached its 50th podcast episode. Very exciting.
Now then, as a reaction to something that Sarah Huntley was talking about, I would like to ask a professional in the field. So, can I ask Graham a question?
Well, there you go.
Graham?
Yes?
What's my speech pattern?
What's your speech pattern?
That's right. What's my Now, you're a commentator. You're an expert in this.
Yeah.
Mm. I'm a rank amateur.
We are both Welsh.
I'm from Pembroke. Yep. You're from where, Robin?
Gwynedd, up in North Wales.
Yep. Right.
So, what's my speech pattern?
I think you've got a really interesting voice because there is, I mean, I am no expert, to be perfectly frank. I do media training, and one of the things we say to people is if you can't get enthusiastic about the subject that you're being interviewed about,
the audience won't.
Why the hell should we?
Exactly.
And
true,
so,
you've got to believe what you say.
Absolutely, you've got to believe. And you've got to, when you are being interviewed, as you are now, you've got to accept that you're giving a performance. You've got to come outside yourself. You've got to... In football parlance, Alex, you've got to give 110%. In other words, don't be
mathematically incorrect.
Yeah, that's impossible. I know it doesn't exist, 110%, but you've got to be yourself and then a little bit extra. You've got to get into the zone for however long the interview is. But I would say you've got a very nice, accessible, interesting voice.
And on that wondrous moment, Emma, would you like to put those last two questions to Robin, please?
Yes. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Absolutely. Thank you.
And will you be joining us again soon?
Just as soon as I'm asked.
Did you enjoy Toy Story?
I loved it.
Did you cry?
It. What an epilogue, eh? No, I don't cry.
I was crying. It was emotionally... From the moment the rain and the
oh,
little...
No.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Okay, then. Cue Shirley Temple.
Things to me. They make may think my neighborhood is a big menagerie. For instance, there's our janitor, his name is Mr. Klein, and when he hollers at us kids, he reminds me of the lion. The grocer is so vacant that he has a big mustache. He looks just like a walrus just before he takes a splash. Animal crackers in my soup, and rabbits loot the loot. Gosh, oh gee, but I have been swallowing animals one by one. In every bowl of soup I see, lions and tigers, what to me? I make them jump right through a hoop, those animal crackers in my soup.
Just a little musical tribute there to somebody who, when we did our first Transatlantic Link together back in 2001, Kelly Duncan joined us, said she was always a keen fan of Shirley Temple, and of course her son just followed through with wonderful Andrew Duncan Joyner and so on. And Kelly Duncan Joyner sadly left us to head into Heaven FM land. We lost another midweek drive at Soul, so another Californian soul has actually headed up into the great sort of star sand. And it's sad, isn't it, Phil Leonis, when we lose friends and colleagues who are actually with us. And I'll put a link on the podcast when it goes up very shortly, so you can actually listen to all or the majority of Kelly's pieces with us, at least from 2010 onwards. But she's quite a soul, really, responsible with the Tom Chasen Agency and a producer as well of all sorts of other great things, including just the recent work with Steven Spielberg she'd been working on. Anyway, Phil Leonis, how are you?
Actress turned agent turned producer, I believe, is the
exactly.
Career arc. 1 year my junior. I mean, it's just it's stunning. It's terribly sad. Yeah. When did we hear this news?
This was literally just a couple of days ago when I found out that she'd passed away just literally back end of last week. And so it goes. I think she deserves a slot on Chilapack Hollywood Hour's celebrity deaths as well.
Absolutely. I've been trying to remember my fellow Midweek Drive contributors when given the opportunity. And it is such a family. I mean, when we do encounter each other, either electronically or, as I like to say, around campus, there's a fondness that comes from being a Midweek Drive contributor.
Even if you haven't been with us for a year, although your book landed up in your box of wedding present delights, if you recall.
Yes. So, yeah, indeed, exactly. Indeed it did. And I can't wait for my eyes to be fixed so that I can start
exactly.
Reading these. I go in for the first ocular surgery on July 2nd, and I trust by July 4th, I will be celebrating independence from my blindness. So I will be enjoying some of these books. And I must, if I can bring the room up just for a moment, offer this little tidbit. I enjoyed a poem about a cricket ball, though I don't really see the appeal of cricket at all.
Exactly.
Well, the point about the poem and
should have been baseball.
Yeah, well,
Babe Ruth.
What's the famous baseball that was the subject of some novel in America? Come on, Alex.
Some novel in America. I don't know.
No, I can't remember.
I don't know. You know what? We're so succumbed to conspiracy theory mania in this country that you bring up a baseball and all anyone will want to talk about is how it's juiced, as we say. The ball, there are so many articles now on how the ball through the years has been manipulated to achieve different records.
Ball tampering.
Yeah, exactly. We don't actually follow the games being played or even the results of the games anymore. We follow the machinations, be it contract negotiations or, as you say, ball tampering. That's our pastime in America.
Tell it like it is.
And why not? Why not when we follow election tampering as well?
So. Absolutely.
You know, I enjoyed, of course, Sarah's insight as a professional, offering professional critiques of professional broadcasters. Mm. I must say it was stunning how quickly that conversation shifted into critiques of people's physical appearances. However, I can only imagine if she had stayed on longer, we would have learned what television personalities smell bad.
Yeah, well, we could go there, but it doesn't quite work on radio. Although some studios I've been in, as Sean Graham will attest to, you think, oh, please, please, get some ventilation. For God's sakes.
Some air freshener.
And editing suite's probably just as bad. Where would you like to take us, Phil? We've covered the importance of cosplay and fandom. We've looked at the Toy Story legacy, coping with change, summer trends. It's Emma's first evening midweek drive. She's been psyching herself up for those last two questions. And as I said, because it is morning in Los Angeles, you'll be okay.
Yeah, I don't have to worry about getting it wrong.
So are we able to
Graham.
I was gonna follow up the cosplay conversation.
Then follow it up, Phil.
Oh, well, first of all, I'm always stunned. Am I delighted? Am I disappointed? We don't know. It'll be something for me to talk about with my therapist. But when Alex and I are in lockstep agreement on something, and indeed when the question was posed, what cosplay character would you go as, indeed, even before he got to the word villain, Kingpin was what I was thinking of for myself. So, Alex, we are, again, shadowy influences upon one another. It would take but a nudge to make us exactly alike. My question, though, would be for Emma and Fergus about any experience. I'm assuming Fergus is still there.
I'm still here, yes.
Okay.
He's working on his sexy voice.
Any experience with cosplay? And is cosplay a popular activity there in Lincoln, at the university, in the countryside?
In the countryside. I don't know if it's popular here. I mean,
We have Lincoln, so we have a convention.
We have the world's biggest steampunk festival in September.
Yeah. Does that count? Is that still cosplay?
It's very much cosplay.
I'd say it is.
I didn't know if that was that's part of it.
You've got your crazy hats. You've got your goggles.
I love it. I've never participated, but still interesting.
I had actually said this was before I became 40, and now I'm 50, but I had said that when I turned 50, I was going to dedicate my life to dressing exclusively in steampunk. And then at 60, wizard wear. That was what I was doing, because I was so taken by what I was seeing at cosplay festivals when I was going around shooting movies and you know, promoting various movies. I was really taken by those particular incarnations of cosplay. But now that I'm there, it's fine. I'm all right not doing it.
You got the waistcoat, and so is Phil Neville, the manager of the English women's football team. It's exciting, isn't it? It's Europe against the USA. The USA against Europe for the FIFA Women's World Cup. Basically,
is that soccer? Are we talking about soccer?
No, soccer. It's football, Phil. Football.
Please.
Do you know where we get the word soccer?
Association football. It's
exactly. We do get it Association.
As opposed to rugby football. Association football was soccer, and rugby football was rugby.
Which is American football without the shin pads.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Or indeed shoulder pads.
Yeah.
Or indeed any protection at all, really.
Yeah.
Apart from mouth guards.
Yeah, or without an audience, even, as it turns out.
So how is the Women's World
Cup? No, I'm just saying it's not a big thing here. It wasn't a criticism. It's just people in America don't watch rugby. I can't help that fact.
That is true.
Are they watching football, Phil?
Oh, my goodness. It's football and NASCAR. That's the thing about sports in America that is truly disturbing. Our two most watched spectator sports, and when I say watched, I mean both in terms of live attendance and the broadcast audience, the two most popular are our American football and NASCAR. And why I find it disturbing is those are the two sports where you literally cannot see the faces of the human beings competing in those events. And that disturbs me. I mean, it's especially because they're the two most dangerous sports. And it begs the question, well, why don't we just have robots do it? We can't see the human beings anyway. There is no human element. It's just literally throwing them to the lions and hoping for the best. As opposed to other sports, be it in our country, baseball or basketball or cricket or rugby, where
the human face, the human experience, is such a part of the drama that's unfolding.
Well, I know you're a keen politician follower in many ways, Phil, so I'll just actually give you some updated news.
I do follow keen politicians,
yes.
You are right.
Yes. From the BBC, that US President Donald Trump has criticised the United States women's team co-captain Megan Rapinoe on Twitter, telling her not to disrespect our country after she said she would not visit the White House if they won the World Cup. Of course, they've got to beat France before then, and possibly England
now,
as well.
Now, when he says our country, when he says... You'll have to help me out on this.
Yeah.
When he says don't respect our country, is he referring to America or Russia? I'm never quite sure.
Very true. Because Meghan should never disrespect our country, the White House, or our flag, especially since so much has been done for her and the team, tweeted Trump. However, Donald Trump initially tagged the wrong account. She actually tagged a Meghan Rapinoe with only 2 followers before deleting that thread and then re-tagging the US star's actual account. The USA co-captain referred to herself as a walking protest in an interview earlier last year, and she's one of 28 players suing the United States Soccer Federation, alleging the men's team earns more than the women, despite playing fewer games and being less successful.
Yes, well, they do get paid less. It is interesting, and their pay is literally tied into results in that they get paid per games. And so... the further they go in the tournament, obviously, then the more they get paid. But they have to, I think, win the entire tournament in order to approach equal pay with the men. And as we know, the men are very fortunate that they are not paid per game because they don't play very often at all, assuming they even qualify for the World Cup.
Asked by Football Magazine 8x8, this is Megan Rapinoe, whether she was excited to visit the White House if the United States won the tournament, she dismissed the idea, saying the team would not be invited. Using an expletive, she also made clear that she would not attend in any event. And that's upset President Trump, apparently. Who actually, I have
yes,
to say...
Yes, he has not been getting many visits. It is a tradition.
He serves burgers from fast food companies. What more do they want?
Oh, you've heard about that, have you? Yes, he's welcomed some collegiate teams.
Hmm.
Professional sports teams have been loath to accept White House. They have disinvited themselves before the invitation has come out. And I actually have found that he is taking great umbrage at that. I have actually found it somewhat refreshing. I find it to be the way to do it where you are not disrespecting the White House, the office, or the country by making it clear before an invitation is issued that you have no interest in going and meeting that man. And so you're not rejecting an invitation. You are letting them know in advance, please don't send an invitation. I think... the Emily Post in me approves of that.
There we are. And as you may have caught these earlier comments about the possible next future Prime Minister of the British Isles, we have ex-Minister Chris Patten in an interview in May talking about Boris Johnson. He's lied his way through life. He's lied his way through politics. He's a huckster with a degree of charm to which I am immune. As well as being mendacious, he's incompetent. And Michael Heseltine, Boris is a man who waits to see the way the crowd is running and then dashes in front and says, follow me. I honestly never thought we'd see the day where we would have actually had the opportunity of Trump and Boris, but yeah, there you go.
Well, I don't know how much this gets covered there, but we have had a fair share of coverage about the fact that Boris Johnson has long been advised by Steve Bannon, who was one of the key architects of Trump's successful presidential
run. And Boris Johnson, despite some video footage proving the link, Boris Johnson has denied that Steve Bannon helped him write a speech.
Yeah,
I mean, it's pathetic.
It is
so obvious what's going on.
Anyway, yeah, we don't normally get political on the Midweek Drive, as you know, Phil, but sometimes we feel that when we're not in
election mode... You could have described both Boris Johnson and Donald Trump's hair, too. They're both ridiculous. We all know what's going on.
I think they're zombies. I just say that, you know, white hair. I think it's a signifier. I think we need to go through that. Check their dietary habits. Check what's in those burgers. I think you find it's smashed up brains. Eye zombie. End of. Phil, a few minutes remain. Who would you like to go to? Would it be Graham Lloyd? Would it be Emma Street? Or would it be Fergus Jeffs? One from Lincoln. What? Actually, Graham, you're not from... You're Wales, of course.
I was born in Wales, but I live in Lincoln at the moment. Exactly.
Fergus from Leicester. Who do you want to go to?
Well, I want to know what brought Graham to Lincoln.
I think it was a car.
But... Originally.
I was actually brought up in Lincolnshire because my father was in the Royal Air Force. And I then went down to Cardiff, where I spent 35 years. And then about 12, 13 years ago, I came back partly for work and partly for personal reasons. And I am actually in the process now of actually trying to get back to Cardiff.
Well, getting out of England is probably one of the key things to look forward to, I would have thought, really. And if you can't get to Scotland, probably it's Cardiff or Ireland, really. But what the hey. I'm sure it'll be all right on the night in one way, shape or form. Sorry, Phil, I cut across you there once again. Most remiss of me. Carry on.
Well, I just, you know, the fondness that I have for Lincoln, the charm, the spell that it has cast. Lincoln has become writ large on my heart, and yet I also do hold such a fascination for, or rather, Wales hold the fascination for me. I have never had the chance to explore, and yet I hear it calling to me.
So it's, valleys, it's fascinating the sound of the valleys. For me.
It is a great country.
You go back and forth between the two.
Yeah, it's a great country. It's not as perhaps well known as Scotland for its independence, because it hasn't got...
Clyde Cymru doesn't sound quite as sexy as the Scottish Independent Party.
It's not quite on the same level as the SNP, but and it's connected to England. Scotland's got its own legal system, its own educational system, which Wales has, but...
But not quite.
Legally,
exactly.
It's actually linked to England stronger than Scotland is, but...
We need a hard backstop, obviously. Anyway, tomorrow morning.
But also, isn't that just because Scotland is freezing year round? I mean, that's why it seems separate.
Well, Hadrian possibly had a right idea, but maybe not. Gabriella Peralta's on tomorrow morning. Richard Fitzwilliams is back with us talking about Diego Maradona. Who'd have thought it? And Julia Bell are the two movies he'll be reviewing. Ian Lennox is back, probably agonising over Rafa Benitez leaving his club. And, of course, Mike Ashley not leaving his club. Dr. Mark Neath and Stephanie Kane will be talking about pop-up phobia, and we'll be talking about, with a former England Women's World Cup captain, Faye White, and, of course, Arsenal's successful captain, with her views on the big game tomorrow. And I'm not talking about the Cricket World Cup, because we can't see it, and England have been rubbish in any case. They've been chokers, so let's just step aside from that point of view. It is England women against Norway's women. That's Norway, as in Norwegian women. In the quarterfinal of the FIFA World Cup in France, the Women's World Cup. Phil, who would you like to ask you those last two questions? I mean, I sense Emma probably already... did you speak to Phil when he used to do some of our morning edition shows?
I don't think you did. So.
No, you probably arrived too late.
Well, you said that Emma's been preparing, so, I mean, it would be awful to take it away from her now.
It's got to be Emma. It's got to be Emma. Yeah.
Are we ready now? Mm-hmm. Is that my cue?
I think so.
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us this morning?
Emma, I love the way you picked up on the oh-so-subtle cue. To ask the question.
Yes.
Yes, it's always a delight, especially so today.
And will you be joining us again next week?
Never again. Actually, I will not be with you for the midweek drive next week, but I shall, Alex, make my return to the midweek drive morning edition.
Wow.
Next week.
It's Independence Day, of course. July the 4th.
To do an early Independence Day report from the colonies, let you know what's going on here, and also to report on what will hopefully be my first successful eye surgery.
Yeah, no, I think I was going to actually wrap up with Good Luck England, but we'll actually say that tomorrow. So I think our farewell line today has to be good luck with the eye surgery, Phil.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, good luck, Phil.
A one, two, a three. Actually, before we do that, we've got a few seconds. Emma, have you enjoyed your first ever midweek drive on an evening?
I have. It was more political than I thought it was going to get, but...
It's not normal.
I've really enjoyed it.
And Fergus, we weren't expecting you, but thank you for being Melissa Wiles today. transgender. Yeah. And have you enjoyed being back for the full show, Graham Lloyd?
I have. It's been great. I always love coming in here. I have never come across a programme like this in all my broadcasting career. I have to say that.
I mean, I don't know. Is it a backhanded compliment? Is it being Welsh?
I think it's a compliment.
I think it could be. It could be no compliment at all. It doesn't have to be. Yes. I mean, it's just a matter of fact. Yep, there's nothing like this.
My name is not Donald Trump or Boris Johnson. I'm telling the truth.
There we are. Let us move on then with the final word after thanking the team. Good luck with your eye surgery, Phil. 1, 2, 3.
Good luck with your eye surgery, Phil.
You could have said it yourself, Phil. You could wish yourself luck, because we start off with luck. So wish yourself
good luck.
Exactly. Make your own luck, Phil, and you will see.
Luck is the residue of design.